Procrastinating, a term most often used by the millennial generation, is a method of putting something off, delaying, or postponing something by taking part in the act of baking.
Welcome to Procrastinate Baking, a place to talk about our baking obsessions and avoid doing everything else. Coming to you from Southern California, I'm Louisa.
And from Eastern North Carolina, I'm Rachel.
Hello, Rachel.
Hi, Lou. How are you?
Good. I actually looked at a map of North Carolina and I got a kick out of looking at the Eastern North Carolina side, looking for your hometown. Why I was looking at a map of North Carolina, I don't remember. Now I wish that was the lead-in into an interesting story, but why was I looking at a map of, I don't know.
Oh, no.
If I remember, I'll bring it up. But yeah, but I thought of you. That is the point of what I'm trying to say.
I'm glad I'm now associated with Eastern North Carolina.
You're their representative.
It's official.
Okay, Rachel, well, what is new?
So I have boxed up my cookie boxes and they're ready to be mailed tomorrow. I am doing 2 by mail cookie exchanges, ours, and then went through the Bake Fest. So I'm excited for that.
That is exciting. I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about your process with picking out what cookies you're going to make for the cookie boxes, because I think some people are very traditional, like they have their recipes that they go back to every year, but I have a feeling that's not what you do. I think you change it up. I think you change things up.
So I'm starting to do that, like as I get favorites, but I have like categories in my head. Like I want one that's spicy, like a gingerbread or chai or something. I want at least 2 that have chocolate. I want something that doesn't have chocolate but isn't gingerbread. I usually try to get like caramel or jam in some of them. Mostly because, you know, we've talked about my jam collection and I have like half jars of them. So like Linzer cookies or thumbprints, like let me finish them up and start the new year with no jam. But so my favorites, I found a couple years ago, this millionaire shortbread bar recipe, and it's become a favorite. So I make it now. Oh, and a shortbread. I make a shortbread cookie and these millionaire shortbread bars every year. And then last year I discovered New York Times has a salted chocolate chunk peppermint cookie. And that's become a staple. So those are the 2 that I've kind of like, these are the recipes. And then everything else is like the categories. And I try and find something to fit in there. I thought I'd found my go-to gingerbread. I think the first year of COVID, we had our cookie exchange outside in a parking lot. And we put down like blankets and then everybody put their cookies out. And then everybody one by one went around and picked them up. And somebody made for me, I'm going to butcher her name, but I think her name is Jazine Prado. She's Sandra Bullock's sister. She has a bakery.
Oh.
I think, in Vermont. Made her gingerbread cookies and they were phenomenal. And she gave me the recipe and I made them and they're good, but they're not as good as hers. So I can't figure out what I'm doing wrong. And the dough is a little frustrating because it's very sticky. So I have to keep like putting it back in the fridge. So I'm thinking I'm going to keep the spice mixture from that cookie and then find another gingerbread recipe that doesn't aggravate me as much.
Okay. I thought of something random while you were talking about gingerbread. Did you know that Queen Elizabeth, wait, which Queen Elizabeth? The first, I'm assuming. It has to be. I guess she's the reason why gingerbread men cookie cutters were popularized, because she requested them for an event. She's like, I want gingerbread, but I want them to look like my guests that are invited. And so,
oh, how cool.
Yeah. And so after that, it became popular to have the little cookie cutouts. Isn't that funny?
That is. And how cool would that be to have a party and like your little favors are gingerbread that are decorated to look like your guests?
You know what? Just become a queen of a country and you could have that every party. That would be so fun.
Because I clearly cannot decorate them. The struggle to decorate the gingerbread cookies today was real.
Yeah, gingerbread is tricky. Okay, yeah, that makes sense. So I like that you kind of update your roster as you find new favorites. The millionaire shortbread, that it was one that you sent in Raul's
yes,
birthday box.
Yes.
And that was by far his favorite. Like, I wasn't allowed. He lets me share the treats with him, but I wasn't really allowed to eat as many of those because they were his favorite. So very cool.
What's new with you guys?
What is new with us? Well, I too have a cookie box exchange coming up, and I'm trying to figure out what's going to go in it. I usually I'll do like maybe 4 things in a box, and 3 will be ones I've done before and 1 will be a new one. That way, if I mess it up, it's not going to ruin the whole vibe of the box. And I wanted to give an update on my daughter's Bluey cake, because I think that was the last episode where I told everybody I was planning on making it. It went really well. It was a way better experience than I had making her first birthday cake, which if you've listened for a while, you'll remember that I had like a meltdown because the frosting that I was making didn't work out, and it wasn't a good idea to put so much pressure on making the cake and having it ready for a photo shoot. That was my mistake. So this year I was like, you know what? This is supposed to be fun. So I made the cake after we put her to bed, and I like made it a whole thing. I had a Christmas movie on and had like my Christmas jammies on. So even just like the vibe was different, and it was just super relaxed and fun. And this year I used different recipes. So I used the Aunt Marge's birthday cake recipe from Midwest Made for the cake. It's like a yellow cake. And then I used the American buttercream recipe from Midwest Made also. And they were both really good. I feel like the American buttercream was what I needed to do this time instead of the Swiss meringue. It was just less finicky, you know? Yeah. And the cake was really good. So thank you to Shauna Siever, I guess, for doing with her recipes, because I had a good turnout and she loved the cake. I like piped the trim, I guess, at the base and at the top. And then I had bought these sprinkles online that were like blue and orange, kind of like bluey themed colors, that were really cute. And then I repurposed one of her figurines, her bluey figurine, to put on the cake at the top. And she was so excited, mostly to see the figurine probably.
It was adorable, Lou. I love your photos.
Thanks. It was fun. It was fun to make. She really enjoyed it. I let her like go to town on it and just eat it at her high chair. And it was good. Successful baking experience. So yeah, now I just got to finalize what I'm making for the box exchange. Oh, and then we're also doing a little like Christmas cookie decorating with one of our neighbors here. She's got a 2-year-old daughter. So they're going to come over at some point and do cookie decorating with us. So just gotta bake for that and prep everything. The more I do these toddler bakes, I'll get a little bit better each time. I'm like, okay, you only ate 3 of the ingredients this time, so that's a win. And today we actually, prepping for this episode, she made cookies with me. And I've sent you pictures of this, Rachel, but she loves the mixer, the KitchenAid mixer.
Yes, I love her face when she's watching the mixer.
Oh, she's obsessed with it. She thinks it's like the greatest thing ever. And so that really helped kind of keep her occupied in between like getting things ready, because I would just turn the mixer on even if I didn't have to just get her to watch it so I could prep things and get things out of the way so she wouldn't grab them. So it was super helpful. But it was so cute. I would ask her, I would say, do you want to put in the sugar for me? And she started saying, yes, mama. Like she's putting those two words together. Aww. Yes, mama. So melts my heart. Yeah, so it's been a lot of fun. So cute. It's time for an ultimate matchup between two baking champions, butter and oil. In this Procrastibaking Takes On segment, we compare which ingredient yielded the better taste. Rachel experimented with brownies and I experimented with cookies. So Rachel, go ahead and tell us what you thought.
So I used my normal normal brownie recipe for this, which normally uses both butter and oil. So I just substituted for each batch, and I took these to work. and they were all eaten. There were no complaints about either batch. And the people who realized that I was taste testing and commented on it couldn't really give me a clear winner, that they were both good and had different qualities. But I will tell you, the butter ones were gone first. And I think for me, the butter ones were better because they tasted, they carried the chocolate flavor better. But the oil ones, I mean, they did have like a, the texture was more fudgy and gooey. So that was nice. But the top of the butter brownies looked more traditionally brownie-like, like that crackly kind of finish. I think that attracted people to cut that slice instead of the other one. I mean, they in a pinch, I would definitely make the oil ones again if I didn't have any butter. The butter one, it was very close to the original. So if I didn't have any oil, I would also do that one. But the butter was my favorite.
Okay. It's interesting because you just, you mentioned something about the butter one carrying the chocolate flavor better in your brownies. And that was almost the exact same wording that Raul used when I asked him to tell me about the cookies.
Okay.
So I did the same thing, just with chocolate chip cookies. And yeah, the butter was the winner in that situation too. And he mentioned that really he would have eaten both, like same with your brownies, like both were fine overall. But the oil ones had like a bit of a crumblier texture to them. And he said that the flavors in that one, especially like the chocolate, everything tasted kind of muted.
Yeah.
Whereas the butter, the butter and like the richness of the butter carries that chocolate flavor through much better. So that was what he said. He was like, could you maybe combine the two? And I was like, I'm sure a lot of people do, because that's like a nice way to, what he did like about the oil one was that it had like a crunchy element on the outside, chewy on the inside. And he was like, the crunchy I like, I just would prefer, you know, the richness of the chocolate to come through more. So a combo is probably where it's at. But yeah, I didn't realize that your go-to brownie recipe used both of those already.
Yeah, it uses less oil. I can't remember how much butter. I want to say it's a half a cup of butter and 2 tablespoons of oil. I'm pretty sure that's what it is for a pan of brownies.
Okay.
So it sounds like they're not necessarily enemies, but maybe frenemies or some kind of work. They work well together.
Well, baking frenemies. I love it. Yeah, I guess so. I mean, if you have to choose, though, I would say the butter cookie was my favorite. Like, I would choose that over the oil one every time. But the oil ones are not bad. And I wanted to mention an article. I think you follow her too, Handle the Heat on Instagram.
Yeah.
She did a little experiment with the same thing, except she did brownies and she did cupcakes. In her trials, she felt the same, that the butter brownies were better than the oil ones, and that butter in the cupcake recipes was better too. And she's mentioning that part of it is that like butter is solid at room temp, so you can do like the whipping with the sugar to give it air and fluff, which is a really nice thing to have in your baked goods, whereas like oil is not, doesn't really allow you to do that. But yeah, but that article that she put out is really interesting if anybody wants a deeper dive into it. But yeah, I guess we've discovered that they're just frenemies.
Sometimes we get a little stir crazy in the kitchen and take a break from behind our ovens to explore what local bakeries have to offer. In today's episode, we visit République, a French bakery in Los Angeles, and we had a really good time. So Louise is going to give you a little history, and then we'll tell you about the 25 things we ate.
Yes, I will give you some history. I'm usually not tasked with history because I know nothing about history, but Rachel was so kind to give me a general guide to help. So République is a restaurant that is owned by Walter and Margarita Mansky. They are the chefs and they are a married couple. And the building that it is in is a really interesting looking building.
It's gorgeous.
Yes, it was built in 1929 by Charlie Chaplin, which is super interesting. And I remember reading that it was envisioned to be like a mixed space. So areas where you could have like performances and vendors and then offices as well. And so the building is really stunning to look at. You feel like you're in France when you're in there. And République has a really long reputation for being one of the best restaurants in the city. And in March 2022, République was named number one in Time Out LA's 33 best restaurants in the city. So it has, yeah, it's a lot of weight on it, right? Yeah.
And their floor is really nice.
Yeah, the tiles in there are really beautiful. It's got like really high ceilings, which is really nice. It gives it an airy quality. But more importantly, let's not talk about the building. Let's talk about what we ate, because we ate a lot of things. I find it hilarious too. I think we should tell everybody that we had a lot of food plans this morning when we did this out and about. So we did Republic in the morning, and then in the afternoon we did Korean barbecue. So initially I was thinking maybe we'd get a couple of things, but then we saw the display case.
Yes, it was so tempting.
And it was like, what else one is of down everything. There? Yeah, we would see things and say, okay, we're getting this, we're getting that. And then Rachel would say, but we haven't seen what's at the end. So then I stayed as the placeholder in line while Rachel and Raul went down to the end of the case and picked out other things that we might want to try. So all in all, we got six different things.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start out with the two.
Our first course.
Yeah, our round one, which were the plated desserts. The first one was the salted caramel chocolate cake,
mm-hmm.
which I think is one of their better known desserts. And I thought it was good, but surprisingly, it wasn't our favorite thing that we tried.
Yeah,
right?
I was shocked. It was good. It was dark. It was heavy. It was very impressive rich. Looking.
Yeah.
It was a nice big slice.
Very salted at times. Mm-hmm. Like the salted caramel.
I felt like the middle layer only had the dam of frosting, and I wanted a little more frosting to help with the salty caramel, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I could do more frosting and a smidge less of salt in the salted caramel. But we liked it.
Mm,
what we liked more was our slice of pie. So that was a mango.
And passion fruit.
Yes.
Cream pie.
Yes. And it's visually really stunning, like the way the mango
it's like
is sliced.
Tiled mango.
Yeah, that's a good way to describe it. So beautiful, and it was so good. I don't know if it's just because we're ready for those lighter types of flavors because it's spring, but the flavors complemented each other so well, and I think that was one of my top two. Right?
Would say? I think it was probably my favorite. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it was delicious.
And I'm not a cream pie person in general. Because a lot of cream pies are, the cream part isn't very good.
They're bland.
They're bland.
Yeah.
But this one had flavor all the way through. It was really good.
Yeah,
and the cream, like, stayed in place. The crust was an impossible crust, though. It didn't want to break.
It was tough to break, yeah.
But it was tasty.
Also, to be fair, we were, like, splitting it three ways. So maybe it's not designed to be like cut up like that. But it was delicious.
Mm-hmm.
And okay, let's talk about one that we didn't love as much. Nothing that we ate was bad. Everything was good, but I think one of the lower ones on our favorites list was the bombolini, chocolate and hazelnut.
Yes, we got the chocolate hazelnut. Yeah.
So it's essentially like a donut.
I think it's an Italian donut maybe.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Rolled in, I think, cinnamon sugar.
Cinnamon sugar. I think the problem was the filling. There were a couple filling choices, and I think I picked the wrong one.
Yeah.
I think the Nutella, it was just too overpowering for the rest of the dough. Like, you couldn't taste the bread or the cinnamon sugar.
Yeah. Do you remember what the other fillings were?
There was a creme brulee one, which normally I like creme brulee, but I was like, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
And then maybe there was a coconut one.
Right. How would they have done creme brulee?
That's what
filling?
I couldn't figure out. That's why I didn't get it, because I feel like I was going to be disappointed.
Yeah. Confused and disappointed. Okay. So that one maybe would be worth trying in a different flavor, possibly. Mm-hmm. But
that was our round three dessert.
Yeah. What was surprisingly good is the one we had right after, which was our savory dessert, right?
Right before.
Ah, right before. That's right. I got the order mixed up. Which was the chicken curry hand pie. And that was, I was surprised at how much
I really
enjoyed
liked
that.
It.
Yeah.
I thought it was good. And it was pretty, like they had crimping around the edge of the pie.
It was beautiful. Everything looked really pretty there too. We were just talking about just how the colors popped on all of the desserts. I feel like they used the fruit really strategically, and I don't know. It was just so visually pleasing to look at everything in the display case.
That's why we kept adding things to our plate.
That's why we got stuck there.
They have mastered it.
So many beautiful things to add to our little box of treats. So the ham pie. And we haven't done too much with savory desserts. We haven't given it the love they really deserve. We were talking about just using curry. I don't use it a lot in cooking, but I feel like it's an underappreciated spice. So, yeah, it was really enjoyable to try, and all the flavors were complemented so nicely. Okay, so what did we have after that?
Number four was something that caught Raul's attention. It was the raspberry cream cheese Pop-Tart.
Oh, yeah. That was number five, right?
No.
Four. Oh, my God. We had two more things after that?
Well, no, it was round four. So it was fifth dessert.
I see. That's true.
It was good. It was better than your typical toaster pastry.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't expect too much from that one because I don't know.
Because it was called a Pop-Tart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and because we're all
but it was good. The kidding. Raspberry cream cheese.
But it was really good, yeah.
The it was raspberry, still better than the bombolini.
Yeah, it was. And raspberry, I think we talked about that too. Like, that can be a tricky flavor to get down.
Sometimes it's just too tart.
Yeah, but that and the cream cheese worked really nice together.
That's good.
And then our last dessert.
I take it back. This one might have been my favorite.
I was going to say.
I think this was my favorite. And the mango was my second favorite.
Okay, so tell us about your favorite.
So it kind of looks like a taco, which was our first clue. This is going to be my favorite. But I think
puff pastry taco.
Yeah, right? This was an invention. We looked it up on the internet. It appears to have been invented by Wildflower during the pandemic. We think we say it crema detta. It's like a loosely shaped croissant almost. It's a puff pastry folded over itself. And we got dulce de leche. And it also had custard in it.
Yes. Now that was really interesting, right? That pairing.
It was like three different textures. It was really good.
It was so good. I loved the dulce de leche.
And
it was
the
so flavorful.
Puff pastry was like extra buttery, I felt like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, even as we were cutting into it, I was like, this looks like it has butter in it. But yeah, I loved that with the custard in it. I loved the look of it. It looks kind of quirky. It was the quirkiest one that we tried.
Yeah, that's what caught my attention was it looked like a taco. I was like, what is this?
I like tacos, and I think I will like this dessert taco. Yeah, it was so good. I now think we need to find more of these.
Yes.
I've never
We're
seen
on
one
a mission.
Before.
No. Yeah. We'll have to make them, too, maybe.
Yeah, make it our mission to find more. Cremadettes.
Yes.
Cremadettes. Even the name sounds pretty. Cremadette. Sounds like something you could name if I have another kid.
And yes,
girl. I'm going to be my daughter, Cremadette.
Raul's giving us the eyes.
So overall, what did you think? You've been to several places now in LA.
Yes. So this was my third bakery experience in LA. And dessert-wise, I think it's definitely the best.
Yeah.
We also got chai tea there.
Yeah, we didn't love the
and
chai tea.
And it wasn't very good. Yeah. I mean, it was average.
Yeah. We've been getting chai tea at all these places.
Yes.
Huh?
Yeah.
Minus
Yeah, Bordeaux's. It was really good.
Okay, so dessert-wise, you feel like...
10 out of 10.
Yeah.
So it makes me wonder. I always thought French baking was just, like, snooty and overpriced. So... are they really the best French baking? Like, is that the creme de la creme?
You know what it is? The thing is, like, so much of what they do is so technical.
Mm-hmm. It's very precise.
Yeah. As much as I vent about not liking making French, it's because you have to be so skilled to do it. So I think it's a big deal that we tried a lot of different things. And even the things we didn't love as much at
good.
A technical level were still well made. It was like, you know... more of a, oh, this flavor was overpowering or less of this. It was almost more like of a personal choice than...
yeah, than something wrong with
something
it.
Wrong with it, you know?
True.
So...
they have truly mastered the art of puff pastry because I don't really like puff pastry, but it's because all the puff pastry I've had before has been pointy. It, like, stabs me in the mouth.
Yeah, we were talking
and
about
this
that.
Was really good. It was still flaky, but it wasn't sharp.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good point. Flaky, but still soft. Yeah, I think I understand why they've
been. I'm now going to move to LA so I can go here more often. Have the cremadettes, please.
Yes, more cremadettes.
We'll end on that note. More creme de I like we'll get that a word. Sticker, a bumper sticker. More creme de We've spent this season learning a choco-lot about making chocolate from chocolatiers. It's time to put some of these tips to the test in our own chocolate-making project. For this episode, we both made chocolate bonbons. Let's talk a bit about how it went. Louisa.
Okay, I will talk about my bonbons, but first, how many times did I make you say chocolate in that intro?
I was wondering that.
Off the top of your head.
I think four.
Yeah, no, it's five. Five, including a little pun. Okay, bonbons. These are actually really fun. I did not realize. Okay, wait, I should back up. Let me preface this by saying that I turned this into a project with my toddler. So in theory, I thought I was going to get really in depth into like the tempering process and being very particular about the temperature, because I know just from talking with the chocolatiers that we've interviewed, tempering came up a lot and how important it is and how like heat sensitive chocolate is. So truthfully, because I was doing a kid-friendly version, I didn't use a thermometer when I was melting my chocolate. I don't know if you did when you made yours. So I kind of just eyeballed it and hoped for the best. and it was a lot of fun. I have a double boiler, which I've mentioned before when we did our gadgets and gizmos episode. Yeah. It's not something that I bust out a lot, but I'm so thankful that I have it, especially when I need to melt chocolate, because after having so many failed experiences of trying to melt chocolate in my microwave, this one is foolproof. And I think you have a mold, Rachel, right, for your bonbons? Like a real mold?
I have like 8 molds. I went a little crazy after the first time I made them and ordered some on Amazon.
That's great. I have no molds, but I have ice cube trays, which I read online can be a nice little substitute. So I have these cute little, there was like a star shape and another one that I don't even know what kind of shape, but they're both cute. And this one was kind of fun because I didn't really follow a recipe. I kind of just did it like a bake it yours style. And I used just like semi-sweet chocolate I had on hand and some mini marshmallows, some crushed up Andes mints, and then some crushed up peppermint. And then we did a white chocolate drizzle on top. And they were really fun. They were fun for Clau to help me with the mini marshmallows. She'd never had them before, and they're like her new favorite thing. But I had her help me put them in each little tray and put the little pieces of Andes mints in each little tray slot. So that was super fun. My mistake was that I should have poured some of the chocolate in first before putting in the filling, because when I pop them out, they're like pockets of like the marshmallows peeking through, and I would have preferred to have like that nice solid chocolate on the outside and not see any of the fillings. That was my bad. But now thinking through the process, I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. That creates like a little base coating. So that was what I would do next time. But yeah, they were really good. They were ready to pop out of the mold after a few hours, and they were fun and easy. And I'd love to do it again, maybe like with a more scientific feel to it, you know, not just like scrambling and throwing things in there before Claudia ate all the ingredients. But even just like the version that I did was really, they were fun and they looked really cute.
They did look really cute. I love the star ones. But when you said before Claudia eats all the ingredients, I was like, this is like a game. Like you have to beat your toddler to assemble the bonbons.
Oh, yeah. They're quick. And like that part of the brain that manages impulse control is not developed yet. And it's like, yeah, it's a race again. It's a lot. Okay, so yours look beautiful. The whole presentation, the tray that you use, even that little box you put them in, everything looks so like professional. So I want to hear about yours.
I feel like I lucked out with these, because you remember when I made the nougat, how terrible that ended up with the gray chocolate. So I totally procrastinated on this one. And in my cart for a while has been chocolate from Amazon. it seems to be a better deal a lot of times than getting it direct from the company because of the free shipping.
Ah.
But I forgot to buy it. It's still in my cart. So I realized I had Ruby chocolate and I had some, I bought from Olive Nation, the like sticks of chocolate that you're supposed to put in like croissants. I just never made croissants. So I still have the sticks of chocolate.
Okay.
So yeah, I decided, okay, we're using these. And I think the sticks of chocolate, I mean, they snap when you break them. I think they're already tempered. So you just have to melt them. And the Ruby chocolate had to be tempered. So I have never tempered Ruby chocolate on my own. Like I did it in class, but I couldn't find my notes. And I was like, okay. So I had to look up online, you know, the temperatures for it and stuff. And my mom gave me my birthday present at Thanksgiving because she wasn't going to see me. And she got me an infrared thermometer, which checks the surface temperature of things. So it like, it's good for chocolate, but not good for like chicken. It warned me on the pamphlet. I was like, okay, got it. So I did. I tempered the Ruby chocolate, poured it in the molds, kind of painted it up the sides of it, and took any excess out. Let that sit. While that sat, I melted the pastry, chocolate pastry sticks. And to that, I added some crushed freeze-dried raspberries and the sugar cookies that I made and stuck in the freezer because they broke. So I crumbled them up and added them to this like ganache type thing.
Okay.
That was my filling. And in each one, I also stuck like a whole piece of sugar cookie. So that way there was like, it was chocolate, sugar cookie, chocolate when you bit into it.
Cool.
And then on top of that, I poured more Ruby chocolate to like seal the bottoms. And then they sat. Well, I took a nap. And I woke up and popped them out of the shells. I was really surprised because I bought, because of my patience factor, I bought the silicone molds. Which a lot of books and websites say don't buy them because they don't give your chocolate a good finish and they're hard to clean and all this stuff. But I've had really good luck with them. So I was really happy with how they came out yesterday. And I'm not a big raspberry fan, but these were good. Like it was balanced with the chocolate and the cookie and the raspberry like it, and the Ruby. The Ruby chocolate is like sweet, tart, fruity. So that kind of mellowed, well, the raspberry, I guess, mellowed out the tartness of that maybe. I'm not sure. Or maybe the Ruby chocolate mellowed the raspberry. I don't know which way it goes.
They help each other.
Yes.
Okay, I have questions because you did it like the real way. Okay, so when you are tempering, because I was reading about tempering, are you melting, letting it sit, and then melting again to like smooth it out? Or
so you're melting it to a certain temperature. This was, I think, 113, and then you cool it down to 80. This is for Ruby. And then you bring it back up to 89.6.
And when you're bringing it back up, what is that for? Is that to get it?
I have no idea.
No, I mean, we're still learning too, but yeah.
It's something with the science of it. Like the different recipes I've looked at the couple of times I've tried to make bonbons and chocolate bars, it talks about the sugar crystals having to be at the right temperature. And like every time it gives a range that's like the it's like a 2 or 3 degree range, like 86 to 90 or something in there. And it's like always like a 1 or 2, you know, it's like a range within that range. And it says this is the perfect working temperature for it. So it doesn't like harden on you and it's still gonna be shiny once it sets up.
Okay. Yeah, yours look shiny. They look so shiny. They're so pretty. Okay, my other question is when you're letting it set, so you're not putting them in the freezer, you're letting them set up on the counter.
Yeah, they should be able to set up on the counter because the freezer, depending on, I think, humidity from what I'm reading, could make it bloom, which is that like white grayish color on the chocolate.
Okay. Yes. I think it was Liz who was talking about this in her interview. Blooming.
Yeah. So, and there's, I mean, that kind of bloom, it tastes the same. It just may not have the snap. It's not going to make it taste bad. But yeah, bonbons, for the most, unless you live in like maybe the desert and don't have AC, most bonbons should be able to set up at room temperature and stay at room temperature.
Interesting. So, how long do you think it took on your counter for them to set?
I left it for about 2 hours, but I think they were done before that.
Oh, wow. That's faster than I thought.
When I coated the molds to start with, it only took like 10 minutes for that because it was so thin.
Okay. And then my other question is the silicone. So you're saying a lot of people who do this don't recommend it, but I was just thinking, like, I don't have a real mold, but my silicone ice molds, which I used for this, were great releasing.
Yeah.
So
I have not had any problems with the silicone, but I did have problems with the polycarbonate, like when you break it out like a traditional ice cube tray.
Uh-huh.
And I smashed them, breaking them out.
So I was going to say the alternative sounds like it would be more, you would be prone to making more mistakes, I would think. But
yeah,
than with the silicone. Okay, cool. Well, they look beautiful and they tasted good. So I give you the Bon Bon Paul Hollywood Gold Star. Thank you for listening to this batch of Procrastibaking. We hope we've provided some food for thought for your next Procrastibaking project. As always, the links and photos discussed in this episode can be found in our show notes. Procrastibake with us on Facebook and Instagram while you wait for our next episode to rise.
We will release new episodes first and third Fridays on your favorite platform. Be sure to tune in to the next batch of Procrastibaking for another take on savory bakes and more answers to your burning questions. We also recreate the infamous trifle from Friends as part of our dessert in a movie segment. Until next time, stay sweet.
This has been Procrastibaking. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts and leave a good review. You can also subscribe to us on Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and many more. You can also subscribe to our RSS feed directly from our website at procrastibakingpodcast.com. Also, feel free to follow us and give us your feedback on social media on Instagram at procrastibakingpodcast and Facebook at facebook.com/procrastibakingpodcast. Procrastibaking is hosted and created by Rachel Rhodes and Luisa Gonzalez, produced and edited by Raul Ceballos, theme music by Alex Walker-Smith, and show artwork by Rob Demers.